Hello and welcome to Macro Minutes. In this episode, Money Control's Arup Roy Chowdhury talks to Principal Economic Advisor Sanjeev Sanyal, who says that the government has saved some big announcements for the budget and that even with localized lockdowns due to the rising COVID cases, the momentum of economic recovery should not be affected. Sanyal has co-authored the G20 Global Action Plan, and he says that the world's biggest economies have committed to keeping monetary and fiscal conditions easy and stimulus flowing, and that there needs to be an alternative way of looking at credit worth of nations and institutions other than credit ratings.
We have with us Principal Economic Advisor to the Government of India, Mr. Sanjeev Sanyal. Mr. Sanyal, thank you so much for speaking to us at Money Control Macro Minutes.
It's a pleasure, and look forward to our little chat.
Thank you, sir. If we remember correctly, in April, there was a global action plan by the G20 countries, which was ratified by the finance ministers then. And now we are 5 months onwards. We have a better idea of what damage the pandemic has caused to human lives, healthcare systems around the globe, as well as the global economy. Yes, and we have had the prime ministers of all the G20 nations meet and ratify another global action report. So how can an organization like G20 take forward this whole issue of dealing with the pandemic and ensuring that the economy comes out stronger on the other side? And how does the Global Action Plan hope to achieve that?
So I think one of the important things that has happened through this crisis has been that despite obviously the severity of the pandemic, there has been a lot better coordination, partly on the health side, but I would say on the economic front, much more than maybe people give credit for. You know, 8 months into this crisis, you know, there has been no major breakdown of the world financial system. And despite problems with obviously trade and slowdown and so on, there has been no important country, for example, which has gone into default, and or the emerging markets blowing up, and many other things that maybe if you had been back in March, you would have predicted. So a lot of this management has happened actually by virtue of coordination by the G20. And I think in many ways, the G20 has come of age. It really has played an important role in keeping the world economy going despite all the shocks. And the basis of that sort of coordination is an action plan that the G20 came up with. It was drafted by the Framework Working Group, which I co-chair along with my equivalent from the UK. And the theme there was to essentially make sure that there is a relatively quick response, that it is a large response, and that is coordinated. Also important there was the idea that this action plan would be an evolving living document. We have adapted it along the way. So the document that we now have, it's an evolved version of the original document from April, May. And it will continue to evolve as the situation evolves. So the question then is, what are the key themes of this action plan? Well, there obviously it's a long document, but there are a few key themes. One is that the global leaders, prime ministers, presidents, etc., of course, the finance ministers and governors have committed to keeping fiscal and monetary conditions easy and the stimulus going for a prolonged period of time, indeed, as long as is necessary to begin to get the world economy going again. And that's a very strong commitment that the G20 has made, which is important for whether it's the private sector or financial markets to know that they have the highest level of commitment to a long-term keeping conditions supported. Second important thing is that there is a commitment to making sure that payments problems for emerging markets, whatever debt restructuring, etc., will be done expeditiously and quickly. There is a commitment towards the health targets as well, and coordination from that perspective as well. So there's a whole bunch of very important commitments in the G20, and I would say that has, you know, that continues to be the bull bark.
What about suspension of debt payments for poorer nations, which is there in the April-May document? So we are assuming this will be released after the G20. So is it there, that suspension?
So of course, as far as, you know, whatever restructuring may be needed by the very poorest country is an important issue. And in that context, there is obviously many things that need to be done, and the Paris Club will be in charge of that. But there is an issue which is popping up, which is something that you know, India has been at the forefront of dealing with, which is the issue of pro-cyclicality of credit ratings. Now, let me explain this, and you will see that this is a very important issue and something which I would say India has played a leading role in highlighting. You see, with the Basel-based international financial architecture, what used to be earlier individual decisions by banks, financial institutions on, in terms of credit quality, it all got synchronized by one grand system in which essentially third party, which is the credit rating agencies, decided on the credit quality for the entire system. Now, there is some benefit from it, obviously, because it means that it provides some degree of standardization, but also means that there is lesser scope for bypassing various prudential norms. However, there is one big problem with this, and that it ends up that everybody in the whole world ends up using exactly the same credit measurement. And so what happens as a result is when you get a external shock like this, what happens is all the credit ratings, whether it's sovereign ratings or company ratings, etc., all of them get downgraded at exactly the same time. Now, this has two big problems. One is that just at the time where you need monetary and other conditions to be eased in order to do, you know, anti-cyclical policy, that is precisely the time where hardwired credit rating related capital requirements of the financial system begin to bite. So it almost undoes the anti-cyclical policy of the monetary and fiscal side by causing the financial system to actually squeeze in a very pro-cyclical way. It's not an independent, that's the whole point. They are not independent. They are actually all linked to each other, and that is the point. So now what happens is that a shock, a global shock, gets transmitted around the world through this channel of pro-cyclicality of credit ratings. So that's one major problem. Now, the second and related problem is what do you do with developing countries or weak country debt, and you want to restructure it. The moment you begin to bring them into restructuring, the very nature of pro-cyclicality of debt is that the ratings agencies then have to say that the so-and-so piece of paper of debt has been restructured, and consequently it no longer enjoys the earlier rating. Mm-hmm. Now that means suddenly that the private sector has to begin to make all kinds of provisions for it by law. I mean, all the Basel requirements are that they have to write them off in various ways. So the moment they have to do that, this now actually causes the system to again tighten, and they have actually got to write off. Now, you may argue that, you know, it's good management for the world to restructure some of the debt, because it's in fact improves the longer term likelihood of getting some money back. However, the pro-cyclicality of the ratings itself stops you from doing it. So this is a very major issue that, as I said, India has been highlighting quite strongly from the very beginning, and is a part of the Global Action Plan. The FSB and the BIS are looking into this. The IMF is now looking at this as well very seriously.
Throughout April, May, June, July, we saw less of sovereign credit ratings, but more of financial institutions credit ratings and corporate credit ratings, or their outlook being slashed by rating agencies across the world, especially the big three rating agencies. So, as you said, that, you know, we need to look for alternative way of measuring a country's credit worth or a company's or a organization's credit worth. So how do you do that?
So first of all, you've got to allow for a greater degree of diversity in the way people think about risk and uncertainty. We now have mandated through the Basel system that this is the only one way to do it. But there are other ways of thinking about the world, and we should allow for greater diversity. I mean, if you take the equivalent from the world of biodiversity, if you do not have enough genetic diversity, then one virus will come and it will knock out the entire species out, because, you know, whereas if you have genetic diversity and risk is being managed in different ways, you will get a shock from here or from there, and the system, which may from a static sense seem more inefficient, may actually be more efficient, because there is a diversity of ways in which people manage shocks and risk and uncertainty. But what we now need to do is to first of all allow for greater diversity, both in terms of how financial institutions think about risk and uncertainty, but also in the way different countries manage it, and also flexibility in terms of, in times of stress, the flexibility allowed to the governments and central banks to be able to ease or tighten according to their requirements. These Basel requirements, so they shouldn't be static targets as we may think them out to be. You know, we have some things called counter-cyclical buffers, etc. They are there. But, you know, frankly, they're also all based on a static view that there is some trend line around which the world goes up and down against. That is, in a complexity-based world, that is not the meaningful way of thinking about it.
Now, sir, this G20 action plan comes at a time when the IMF so far has said that the global economy is expected to contract by 4.4% this calendar year, this year. Now, given what we are seeing in the US, cases are rising, death toll is rising. Earlier this week, they've had the worst ever day of death tolls. There is a second wave in Europe. Again, municipalities and regions are being shut down. So, how bad is it going to be by the time this year ends? We'll come to India later, but for the global economy. So even all this is 4.42 optimistic, a contraction of 4.42 optimistic.
So I can't comment on what the IMF's forecast are, but all I will say is, I think the view we have taken in India right from the beginning about India and the world is that this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. Mm. And that we need to be aware that we are functioning in a world of uncertainty. Getting too excited about, until we have a vaccine that we know works, getting too excited about, you know, exactly how things are going to pan out and have been prescriptive about forecasts is, in my view at least, a waste of time. We genuinely do not know. In those circumstances, we need to be able to respond in a way where, first of all, you do not fire off all your ammunition right at the beginning because it will last for a while. Secondly, you do need to respond while keeping your eyes entirely open to how things could pan out to be. So you have to have a Bayesian updating of information and ideas continuously, and do not fire all your bullets off in the beginning because you are going to need it somewhat later down the road. And also do not be ideological about the kind of responses you may need. Some may require you to liberalize and open things up. And other things will require that you have to be more interventionist. Whatever happens to be the most sensible thing, given the apparatus and tools you have to be willing to do. So, you know, we did a very, very severe lockdown in the beginning because at that point in time, we were unclear about the nature of the disease. We needed time to respond to, you know, building capacities and testing capacity, quarantining capacity and so on. Then since then, we have been sort of opening things up. Now, the rest of the world took different approaches. And, you know, they are now responding to with a much stronger lockdowns than maybe they had in the beginning. But, you know, everybody is sort of making their way through uncertainty. And I think we should, I wouldn't like to judge others and what they did to their circumstances. But very important that everybody remains vigilant, flexible, and very important, do not expend a large amount of time trying to project exactly how this is panning out to be. Nobody predicted 2020, and I'm telling you, nobody is going to be meaningfully predicting 2021 either. It could be a lot better than we are expecting, or it could be worse.
Now, the counter to all the pessimism, obviously, is that two vaccines, Moderna's vaccine has 95% success rate in final trials, and even Pfizer is also close to 95%. So does this spell good news for the global economy?
Well, I'm not a health expert, so I can't comment. I'll go with what is being reported. So my sort of layman's approach to this is, sure, I mean, it's good news that people...
Three cheers for science.
Three cheers for science. And it's great when we have these vaccines coming on board. Whatever the vaccine is, however, let me say that India will play a major role in mass-scale production of it, both for ourselves and for the rest of the world. And this is not about just the manufacturing. There's also the complex logistics of supplying it and then administering it. All of this, India will play a major, major role in the world supply chain of this. So I think, you know, this is something we are already gearing up for.
Okay. So this is my segue into the questions regarding India. Now, there are these two vaccines, plus a lot of vaccines are going late stage trials in India as well. So obviously, it is the state governments and it is also the corporate sector which will be playing a big role in providing the logistics, the storage, as well as the distribution of the vaccine. What role is that of the central government, and what plans does the central government have to ensure that production is ramped up Anyways, India is considered the world's pharmacy. Production is ramped up. There are enough storage facilities. There is enough facilities for transportation as well as for distribution to the last remaining citizen.
So obviously, this is something you really need to direct towards the health ministry and the logistics and commerce ministry rather than to me. All I will say is that I am aware that there is a lot of work going on in terms of making sure all the bells and whistles of the logistics are being worked out. The private sector, the state government, the central government is putting together. Remember, there are inputs of all kinds that have to be imported. There are logistics of exporting it, of redistribution across the country. It's not just about state governments. There is massive nation-level distribution capacities that have to be built. So, and of course, standardization, training of how you administer it. All of this requires coordination at multiple levels. And a lot of effort is already going on in this direction.
And this being monitored right from the very top of the government?
Absolutely. I mean, this is obviously a national priority. Not for us, it's a global priority. I mean, that's not only a national priority.
Okay. Now, sir, while of course everyone is awaiting the news on the vaccine, meanwhile, a lot of cities, a lot of states are seeing a second wave. Cities like Delhi are seeing a third wave. While a nationwide lockdown again is ruled out for now, there are talks about local lockdowns or regional lockdowns or citywide lockdowns. So what impact will, again, that reduction of activity, what impact could it have, which is still recovering, which is still sort of fragile in its recovery?
So, as I was telling you right from the beginning, we have had, from the beginning, a simple strategy to deal with the sheer uncertainty of how this pans out. And I've always mentioned that it's called the barbell strategy, which we have derived from the financial market, where we did two things. One is we hedged for the very worst case. In the beginning, because we did not have enough information of how things were going to pan out. Because back in March, April, we didn't understand the virus. We didn't know anything about the vaccine. We didn't understand, what kind of quarantining we needed. And, you know, we understood virtually nothing about, you know, death rates and other things. We now have a lot of information, both from our own experience and from global experience. We also have a lot of capacities already built in. General behavior of the population in terms of wearing masks, etc., has improved, and so on and so forth. So we are now in a much, much better position to deal with this, step by step, disaggregated way than we were in the beginning. So in the beginning, we had to do what we had to do because at that time we have a hedging for the worst case. Now we know what the nature of the pandemic is, and we are now in a position to allow for much more localized, targeted responses. So, I'm sure the health authorities in Delhi are aware of what is happening and they know which are the bad signs in terms of, oximeters measuring oxygen levels. There are certain comorbidities that are particularly dangerous and so on. So you can take a much more targeted response than doing a blanket shutdown. I mean, I don't think we would think of doing a nationwide lockdown, but even at a localized level, I think we can take a much more nuanced approach now, which we couldn't have done in the beginning, but we can now.
See, any target approach will again lead to some sort of reduction in activity in the areas where the target approach
is. Yes, and I think we have...
So at a time when the green shoots, I mean, there has been a strong showing in certain indicators that, you know, these activities are even better than last year. In September and October, we saw that in certain...
So I think when you're taking a large country like India, at any point in time in the country, some disruption happens. There's an earthquake, there's floods, etc. But the overall momentum of the economy is not so badly thrown off by any individual part being disrupted. Consequently, I would say we shouldn't be too concerned about the fact that if say, Delhi has a problem in a neighborhood or some group, there some extra controls have to be put back in place. Sure, it's not ideal and there's some impact of that, but I don't think the overall dynamics gets too badly thrown off. As long as the general theme of green shoots, etc. is coming, and we are getting very good high-frequency data suggesting that, you know, we are getting momentum.
So in spite of the rise in cases and whatever measures may be taken at a local level, you're still expecting the high-frequency indicators we have, which have shown such strong signs of recovery August onwards, you're still expecting that trend to continue?
I think the general momentum is there. Obviously, you know, it's not happy if a major city like Delhi has to do something more serious. But even in that case, as we're going through a third wave, the kinds of responses we have put in have been, relatively speaking, light touch. There are extra friction has to be. So sand has to be thrown into the wheels in some ways. But we are not doing the kinds of shutdowns we would have done in an earlier period when we didn't understand the nature of this.
Now that we are seeing such strong signs of recovery, do you expect this October-December quarter to turn positive?
Frankly, we are not obsessed with the exact statistics. I mean, what we can tell is that the October to December quarter will show economic activity returning close to pre-COVID levels. Mm. Whether it's slightly positive or slightly negative, I have no way of judging. We haven't even finished with this quarter. Mm. But it will show significant return to some level of normalcy. Mm. Obviously, the longer, the following quarter may even show a positive number.
That is the general
one. Yes, but then that depends on how our exports are doing, which in turn depend on how things are in the rest of the world. And of course, there is the other issues about whether what the situation is with the vaccine and other things, which I'm not an expert on, and there is significant uncertainty even now. But I would say that by certainly the first quarter of the new financial year, many of these things, whichever way it goes, even if there is delays on the vaccine front, I think some sort of vaccine will be getting rolled out by that time, from what I'm told. Mm-hmm. In which case, I think we will be beginning to see genuine positive growth coming back. And those numbers could be very substantial. In fact, I mark my words on this. Look at all the forecasts today. I think you will see significant revisions to those numbers. Yes, FY22 numbers. I think I'm much more confident of those being revised very significantly up. Before I end, let me say that at that point in time, if forecasters use the excuse that they are getting it wrong because of low base, then do remind them that a low base is known and that forecasts can never be wrong because of a low base.
Now, sticking to that, we have, as you said, we have had four rounds of target measures. The first one was to ensure, that was Garib Kalyan, was to ensure that the poorest section of society, the ones which could be worst affected by the pandemic, they are looked after. Then you had Atmanirbhar Bharat 1, Atmanirbhar Bharat 2 and Atmanirbhar Bharat 3. Going ahead, obviously, there is a budget in February. But before that, are we expecting more measures, more such announcements?
Well, obviously, one always prefers to keep the heavy ammunition for a budget. But let's see. I mean, we are watching the situation as it pans. We have always said that this is a feedback loop-based system. So depending on what the feedback is, we will do what is necessary.
Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Macro Minutes. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.